Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to yet another segment of Afternoon Satsang, offering our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our dear Swami. On this, if I can say, momentous occasion for both of us, that is, Prem from Team Radio Sai and myself, Arvind from Team Radio Sai, because unaware, you know, in such a beautiful, magical manner, we realized that we have almost completed, not almost, we have actually completed one full year of Thursday Lives, and it was actually 3 days back that we got to know that this would be our 52nd broadcast, you know. So it feels really wonderful, and on this occasion, we would definitely like to take a few moments to thank, first of all, with all our gratitude, Swami, for making this happen, because nothing ever happens, not a blade of grass moves without His grace. And then the next most important is all of you, dear listeners, who have given us so much encouragement as we took our baby steps and as we toddled our way and started walking with support. Today, the position, the place that we have reached in terms of these live Thursdays is all because of your unending support, loving support, very forgiving support, because when we started off, we were nothing but amateur amateurs. Today, if we have gained some experience, it's all because of your love, support and feedback that has kept us going. What do you think, Prem?
Yes, indeed, Arvind, I cannot agree more with you, because indeed it's been an interesting journey, a revealing journey in a sense. And we definitely have to thank Swami for giving us this opportunity, because, you know, before you take the step, you are never you're never brave enough to take the journey. But I think it is that support which comes from within, from Swami and the people around you, that's so important, because, you know, that is where we get our active response from. That is where we know that we are moving in the right direction. And we indeed thank you, dear listeners, for the support which you have given us, for the encouragement which you have given us. And that indeed has been so important for all of us.
Because I remember, Prem, you know, in the first few times when we sat together talking here, you know, it would feel like, yes, Swami's chair is here, so Swami is sitting and listening. But it almost felt like a personal and private chat that was going on. And it is only because of the feedback and the loving message that we receive that, you know, we woke up, hey Prem, you know what? They're listening, man. They're listening. This is listening. These people are listening. And when we get those mails from, say, South Africa or Australia or the United States or so many places from India too, we feel so thrilled, and we realize that it is nothing short of a miracle that a small satsang that is happening here with Swami, in Swami's presence in this room, two of us sitting and talking, and we are being joined in by so many people who are participating in the satsang in their own manner by writing and sending in their thoughts. It has really been a very, very fulfilling experience.
And of course, apart from the physical response you got, I'm sure that even as we, you know, put out on the website that this is a topic we are planning to discuss, I'm sure many of the questions which should have arisen in the people who are waiting to listen to the satsang would have, you know, in a way propelled Swami to answer those questions through us. Definitely, I'm sure that also would have happened. Because as we have always maintained, many times what we speak here are things which are even fresh for us. It is not like, you know, we know it and we have been practicing it and we are giving it to you. It's also a revelation to us as we
speak. And that's why, because of that only, as part of preparation, more than reading up and brushing up our thoughts on a particular topic, we constantly keep praying to Swami so that we remain like His flutes, without our ego. And, you know, ego has such a silent and subtle way of entering. We just pray that that doesn't happen, and we are able to be like the flute through which He can blow His breath. And we are really grateful to Swami for giving us that opportunity.
Yes, listeners, that brings us to the New Year's new satsang, if we could say, because this is indeed a starting of a new year of Thursday Life. And
our new year seems to be, you know, coinciding with like the academic year of the institute and the hostel, right?
Right. Right in the middle. And even as Raghu left you, with his little meteorological goodbye, he gave you the exact temperature of the day. And that again reminds us that we are in the middle of a summer, you know, middle of summer, and summer always reminds us of summer vacations.
Because you know, the magical thing about summer vacation is that though we are in a point in life, you know, hitting our 30s, where summer vacation actually doesn't matter, you know, because we are past those school days, those institute days, and yet summer always reminds us of summer vacation because of the fun that we have had during summer vacation and the kind of activities that we have done during the summer vacations. So vivid are they in our minds that, in my mind, it is so vivid, all the things that I used to do in the summer, that even today, even though I am working, I'm a working person, I'm working in an office, I somehow take my leave or my vacation, my annual vacation, in the summer itself.
Right.
There's no need for me to take it in summer, but so programmed it has become that in spite of having gone out of that cycle from the past 6-7 years, even to this day, whenever I take a vacation from office, I take it for 10-15 days in summer. That is how powerful the feelings and memories of summer vacation are.
Very true. And you know, even as you said, even as we are planning vacations, it suddenly reminds me that, you know, I mean, it just comes to me that I don't need to wait for the summer to take a vacation.
Because, correct.
You know, I mean, working with RadioSci, working for any other organization, I think any other month is as busy as a summer month would be.
And there's nothing sacrosanct about summer, or nothing holy about summer, nothing special like that. But just that we are so used to it that we continue along with that. We need not wait for summer, but we somehow wait for summer.
Right, and you know, talking of summer vacations, it takes you back to the 100 things which you used to do during summer to pass the time. Because, you know, even as children, you know, till summer comes, you're so busy with your academics, you're so busy with the rigmarole of going to school and the curricular activities which go with it. You know, when you're waiting for summer, but once the vacation start, you're actually looking for things to fill summer with. And of course, we had a lot of things to fill summer vacations with.
I remember when I used to go home, this used to be in the school days, because somehow after joining college, I felt that the best way to spend each summer would be to spend it with Swami. And therefore, whether Swami was in Vrindavan or Parthi, mostly it would be Vrindavan, I would go and stay there only, in Vrindavan. And there used to be those daily Trai sessions, which are unforgettable. But even then, you know, there's only morning darshan and evening darshan and Trai session. We still had about 12 hours of the day. And I remember those days, how we used to play cricket, football. It used to be unbelievable fun, because we have the whole day to ourselves to play. So as college students, we would go to the ground, play cricket match after match, play football or play table tennis, play shuttle badminton. And we used to, you know, innovate so many other games also. We even had one or two treasure hunts that we organized, you know, because we would be staying on a campus that is so huge with the grounds. So there would be two teams, and each team would organize a treasure hunt for the other team, running around all the place and finding those little chits, those paper pieces, which will hold your next clue. Using all your brains to decipher the clues, because some of the clues would be would require encyclopedia knowledge, some of them will require local knowledge, some of them will require language knowledge. It used to be such wonderful team activities and fun things to do. Wow, summer vacations were really memorable. That was when, as I said, when I used to stay in Vrindavan during the vacation. Even when I used to go to Bombay, that was my hometown then, when I used to go there for the vacations. Those times also, the whole day would almost be filled with games. You know, we used to play, apart from cricket and football, we used to even play hide and seek, because we stayed in a huge building with, huge building in the sense it was an estate with 10-20 buildings, so a lot of hiding places there. And even a single game of hide and seek would go on for 2-3 hours. Meeting a lot of friends, you know, there are friends in school, there are friends back home. And it was a different set of friends, so you're meeting new. It used to be so much fun interacting, playing, and meeting up with so many people.
I know, talking of staying back in Vrindavan during summer, I mean, it just takes me back to the time when, you know, because Swami used to make so much effort to make that stay during summer special. Because, correct, you know, Swami would know that these are fellows who have not gone home. Mm. They're missing home food. You know, they've missed it all the year long and they're continuing to miss it even in the vacation.
Mm.
Swami would make it a point to somehow, you know, under some context, arrange for a grand lunch.
Some pretext, yes.
In some pretext, and you know, and there would be mangoes. There were times when, you know, we used to eat 2-3 mangoes in a day because Swami would give it in the mandir and Swami would give it in 3 sessions. Then when you go for dinner, Swami would have sent it there also.
Mm.
Like, you know, Swami found ways of making that summer vacation so special because...
And apart from those material gifts, how can we forget those activities that, you know, every day Swami would call us for 3 sessions. And in those 3 sessions, what would happen would be so magical. Almost 2 hours with Swami, music, speaking, mono acting, and Swami's discourses, listening to good thoughts, spending so much time in... It is, you know, we used to wait for a vacation because we used to feel that there are so many things that we love to do, but we are not getting enough time because of the academics. Once the vacation starts, Swami would ensure that we spend part of our time on things that we are supposed to do also, and Swami would make them so fun simply by His presence.
Really, and you know, I remember that summer vacation time, invariably, the format of a thrice session otherwise would be that a couple of elderly speakers would, you know, talk,
mm-hmm,
the teachers or the guests, and then Swami would have a discourse. The interesting part of thrice sessions was the chat which used to happen between all this.
Correct.
Swami used to be sitting there and talking to the boys. But invariably during the summer vacation, Swami would do something different. Because,
correct,
I remember one day Swami suddenly came and said, Swami had about 7 speakers,
mm-hmm,
from the students speak in 7 different languages.
Correct.
And, you know,
I remember that very vividly because I was hoping that I'll get a chance to speak in Kannada in,
okay,
Swami's presence. But that never happened. That was, well, just maybe a byline, but that is a very important day for me because on that day, one of the speakers who spoke, you know, I still remember his name was Sailesh Bangdale,
mm-hmm,
and he spoke in English. Swami told him to speak in English. And he saw me sitting sad after that thrice session.
Okay.
When he came to me, asked what happened, I told him, you know, brother, I hope that I would also get a chance. And because Swami asked that boy in Telugu, this boy in Tamil, that boy in Hindi, I thought Swami will ask me in Kannada. I was preparing. I never got that chance. He smiled, patted me on my back, and he said, you know, with the intensity with which you're preparing, continue to do that. Continue to do that. Because brother, after 4 or 5 years of pining and slogging, it is now that I'm getting a chance. Don't think that it is out of the blue that Swami picked and I got a chance. I have pined for it for 4-5 years. If you feel you have pined for it for 2-3 years, don't stop pining, keep pining, and you will get a chance. That was a very, very important lesson I learned. That is, don't judge a person when he gets a chance thinking, oh God, you know, Swami picked him up out of the blue and hope I also get picked up out of the blue. Of course, I can get picked up out of the blue, but let us remember that every act of Swami has so much significance and meaning behind. So personally, that acted as a great motivator for me. And I got my chances to speak 2-3 years after that. But I even to this day remember that advice that he gave me, saying that don't give up midway, because with God, effort is never wasted.
Absolutely. And you know, talking of those thrice sessions, I remember the same summer,
mm-hmm,
only suddenly Swami would come and ask, I want to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, you can answer.
Something, and those who give answer, I'll give a gift.
I'll give them a gift. You know, something Swami would come up with, then I remember one summer Swami came and distributed robes.
Hey, you just mentioned that question, right?
Yeah.
I remember one very interesting question. Again, I remember it because of personal association.
Mm-hmm.
Swami came and asked a question, that is, in the Ramayana, when Rama sent Hanuman, you know, with the ring,
mm-hmm,
to find Mother Sita.
Right.
Rama gave the ring only to Hanuman because, you know, the Lord knew that it will be Hanuman who will actually find Mother Sita.
Okay.
None of the other monkeys were given his ring. So Swami's question was, when Hanuman met Mother Sita, what was Mother Sita's question to Hanuman?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all of us tried, you know, I also tried. I mean, I tried some answer. I don't remember now, but I just tried some answer because Swami had said that those who give the correct answer will get a gift from Swami.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was vying for it. It was like a lottery. And all answers were being thrown. It was, you know, just like a classroom. Anybody who has an answer raises up his hand. And Swami says, okay, you, okay, you, okay, you. So many. I remember when I told Swami, said, "Nee talakai." Means don't say gibberish. It's, mm-hmm, it literally translates as your head.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot translate that language. So finally the answer, very interesting. You know what was apparently what was the The first thing that Sita asked Hanuman?
Yeah, I think I remember that, but I'll let you share it with
others. Oh, thank you.
First.
Okay, yeah. So apparently Sita asked Hanuman, she did not ask whether, did Rama give this ring? She asked, from which finger did Rama remove this ring from?
Right.
And Hanuman answered, the answer was Rama pulled it out from his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami said that Sita felt happy. Because it seems that Rama was missing Sita so much that he had grown so thin that the ring that would actually fit on his ring finger now had to be worn on his thumb. So that was when, see, that is another magical thing that would happen during the summer vacations. We get to hear these kind of stories which other times Swami does not reveal.
Right.
It was so interesting. In fact, after that some of us, you know, we made up a concept called Sita syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
A Sita syndrome is when you feel happy when someone you love is suffering. Because that suffering is because of you.
Sign of
them missing you, them wanting you, them loving you. So Sita knows that Rama is starving and is hungry, but she feels her happiness within because she knows that her Lord is also missing. We also feel that same thing, right? Means though we shed tears when we come to know, when we hear those episodes where Swami did not eat because his students had not eaten. But those students would have definitely felt very special. You know, that is Sita syndrome. You know, Swami did not eat because we did not eat. You feel so much that, wow, Swami belongs to us. So well, yeah, I just got lost in memory lane. And I think, yeah, before we get lost further in memory lanes, we come to the point that we were discussing, Prem, that we had such beautiful summer vacations, so many activities that we used to indulge in. But you know, last two summers when I have taken vacations and have been to different places, have been to my own places, seen my own cousins, seen so many of my, you know, so many people, I somehow feel that the modern generation is missing out so much of the summer vacations, so many aspects, they're missing it so completely. And I feel that is partially because of the rapid and massive advances that, you know, social networking has done, the computer has done, the television has done, the way it has imploded in our lives, the way it has inundated our lives. You know, it is sad that even during summer vacation, there are very few, unless, you know, in Puttaparthi or other villages if you go through, but if you go to the cities, not much of cricket going on, not much of games going on, not much of outdoor activity. Somehow, vacation seems to have become a time that is spent all inside the house.
And true, you know, as you mentioned, social networking, you know, when we were, we're already sounding like we are from a bygone era, but the fact is, it's just some time back. It's not even, you know, very long ago.
Yeah, maybe 5 years back.
Right, just a few years back, it used to be there, because when vacation comes, you're waiting to go and meet friends, you're waiting to go and socialize really. But now it has become like, you know, that is
socializing on a network.
Right, that's the only time parents allow children to use their mobiles, allow children to go on social networking. So they're waiting to go and socialize on social networking sites.
Mm.
So I think that is, and you know, that also brings in a kind of restlessness. Because, you know, when I see some of my cousins, you know, I was talking to a cousin of mine, he was telling how his son needs to be given something or the other at any given point of time. You know, he would come and ask for his father's mobile. And he would be fiddling with the mobile. So suppose the father wants to make a call, he has to give him some other gadget to take the mobile out of him.
A replacement.
You know, yeah, he'll have to give him a tablet or something and then, you know, take the mobile. Or he'll have to start the system and allow him to sit on the system. And, you know, he needed something or the other to keep himself occupied. The thing of looking around and looking at what is around you, even in nature, you know, that's completely gone. Because even if you read some of the great poets, like, you know, the works of Oscar Wilde or Longfellow, I mean, they all glorify that going out in the summer and being in nature. I think that is kind of lost with all these things.
In fact, I don't know if many are aware of these names also, Wordsworth or Longfellow. I mean, they are not the names that fill the consciousness today. And this is happening so much. About 2 months back, I had read an article on the internet about how internet has become such an addictive thing. In a place, in a country, South Korea, for example, they have amazing internet speeds.
Okay.
unimaginable in India here. I mean, it is something like they apparently have 16 Mbps, 32 Mbps. Here when we feel so happy with 1 Mbps. But that kind of bandwidth and internet speed has given them access to amazing kind of, you know, 3D games and 3D gaming has become so addictive. They have cafes in which children, 12, 13, 14 years of age, sit for something like 14 to 20 hours at a stretch playing without food, drink or sleep.
My God.
And I'm sure you would have read how the government recognized this.
Recently in South Korea, the government has recognized internet addiction as in par with the other addictions which we are familiar with.
Drug addiction.
A, right, very dangerous thing. And, you know, a couple of years back, there was that disturbing news about how a mother and father who are gaming addicts actually went on to even, you know, not care for their infant and eventually losing that child.
Exactly. And, you know, the ironical thing about that, Prem, the mother and father were playing a game in which they bring up a virtual baby.
My God.
Were competing on who can bring up the baby better, while their real world baby lay dead. The police had to arrest this and arrest the couple, and they were put into jail. And then there is another case of a guy who played and died of playing. I mean, I first felt like laughing. Because how can you just collapse dead on the keyboard? You have played so much that you have neglected food, water and sleep that for after 2.5 days, out of sheer exhaustion of playing, you drop dead.
I think really when the screen came game over, I think it was really game over for the gamer there. Oh
and
my God.
I don't think that it was game over on the screen, but it was definitely game over here.
My God.
And though first I laughed, I mean, it is a very, very serious thing. And today, when we talk of Olympics, there are Cyber Olympics, where gamers sit and just game. They play Olympics and all these, they do all these on a system. It's almost like there is no real life. It's all been sucked up into the virtual world.
Like one of my friends was saying when he went back home, his brother was sitting and playing some, you know, football game or cricket game on his, you know, PlayStation or whatever. And his mother was calling him for lunch. And he was saying, no, let me just score a few more runs and come. And mother was saying that, had you gone out to score those few runs, at least you would have had good health.
And you would have wanted food. You will be hungry.
Right, you know, and that is, it's a very sad thing, but you know, we all are, without our knowledge, becoming a kind of convicts of our own habits, without our volition, I think.
Correct, and of course we are in part to blame for it, because everything has been introduced by us only. So there is definitely a need. I mean, the problems that existed previously might not have existed now, but we have created new problems. But I feel when it comes to addiction, this is an age where addiction is most rampant. And dear listeners, that was what we thought we should keep this satsang about, addictions. Because say 10 years back, 15 years back, when anybody spoke the word addiction, it often would mean either drugs or smoking or alcohol. That's all, just about 4 or 5 things, gambling maybe. But today, the word addiction has found such diverse meanings, starting from gaming to social networking to cell phones to computers to television. Oh my God, there are so many avenues to get addicted, and there is so much propaganda to make it feel as if it's a cool thing to do and not a terrible thing. I mean, addictions are glorified.
Well, I mean, literally, you can imagine one of those old English poets sitting in his barn and, you know, just looking at the blue sky and the meadows. He would have been looked like he's weird. I mean, you're just sitting idle. You're not doing anything.
Correct. And this has gotten so much into our consciousness, Prem. Just yesterday, while returning from Bangalore, you know, we had a car breakdown at Gorantla, which is about 33 kilometers from Puttaparthi. The car simply broke down and was refusing to start. So we stopped the car and tried to find a mechanic. A mechanic came and said, I can't do anything because I know only how to repair diesel vehicles. It's a small place. You need to get a mechanic who can repair petrol vehicles.
Right.
So we had to get a mechanic from Puttaparthi. So I had to call somebody from Puttaparthi. They had to go to the mechanic, find out if he's free, then pick him up and get him. All this finally it took about 1.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And for that 1.5 hours, when I sat there,
mm-hmm.
just outside my car, doing nothing. I did nothing because I needed my phone for communication and my phone had only 15% battery left. So there was no way I could use phone for any other entertainment. I just sat there. It was beautiful, no doubt, but it was also very tough. I then realized how much all these things have become part of my life, that simply sitting without doing anything seems like a waste of time. I want to fill up the time with some activity or something that's at least entertaining. Either work or entertainment, otherwise time is wasted. That is what has become our psyche today. And that in itself is an addiction, I feel. Addiction to work / entertainment.
I think that is the reason why, you know, Swami is so much against being captives of habits or addictions.
Mm.
Because, you know, as Swami says, man has to be in control of his life. And anything which can control him is something which man has to abhor. And
correct.
I think that is one of the reasons why kicking a habit, even a trivial one, is so important. Because, you know, as you were telling me the other day when we were discussing, because that leads to restlessness, that kind of changes your character. And when you get addicted to a habit and when it is removed or when it is forcefully not available to you, then it changes your nature. You become restless, you get angry, you get irritable.
Exactly, because you know, for example, if you take a person who is addicted to smoking, you go and ask him why he is smoking, and if you try to give him or her a lecture on how smoking is bad for health and smoking should not be done, the shocking thing, it's not shocking anymore, but the shocking thing is that it is not that they're unaware. It's not that unknowingly they're flirting with danger. They're absolutely aware of the devastating effects of smoking. But yet, he has to smoke. And you ask him, why do you want to smoke? He'll say, I don't know, but if I don't smoke, you know, I'm going to get restless, as you said. After 5 hours, it'll become unbearable. You know, I'll be very irritable. I'll make a mess of things in office. You know, smoking somehow calms my nerves. It helps me work better. So, now imagine, do you mean to say there are nobody who is able to face 10 situations or calm their nerves or work without smoking? There are many. But just that habit of smoking has changed your character itself. Right now you're so dependent on smoking that without smoking, you're a different person. With smoking, you're a different person. Your character is defined by smoking. And that is what Swami says, you know, that your habits shape your character.
Absolutely.
When Swami used to tell it in a discourse, you know, just like a statement, I used to listen to it and take it on, your habits determine your character. But today, we can see it. You know, if we just open our eyes, we can see how habits change character of people.
And you know, you were saying that people feel happy doing some things, like, you know, a person who smokes, you know, gets some kind of pleasure out of it.
Mm.
Being non-smokers, we cannot say that there is no pleasure in it. I mean,
correct.
Even though we might be right, I think we would not be considered right because we are people who have not indulged in it, thanks to Swami. So we cannot comment on it, but let us even say that there is some pleasure in some of these habits. You know, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to tell a very beautiful story of how, you know, a mill owner, a guy who actually makes rice out of paddy, okay, and how he used to protect this rice from rodents. You know, this is an analogy which Ramakrishna Paramahamsa used to say. In the godown where there are sacks and sacks of rice, what he would do is in a plate put puffed rice and keep it in the open. Okay, and invariably the rodents and the rats and the other animals which come will eat only the puffed rice and go away. Okay, and you would say that from one kg of, let's say, rice, you can get 14 portions of puffed rice.
Okay.
So that's how invaluable actually that puffed rice is. So by putting out something like just 2-3 handfuls of puffed rice, this guy was actually protecting kgs and kgs of the valuable rice. So Swami would say, all these habits and addictions, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa would say, all these addictions and habits do give you pleasure, but it is like that puffed rice compared to that kgs of rice, which you are actually not going to, because this is easily available. So I think these pleasures which come out of some of these, you know, habits which eventually lead to your downfall are so easily accessible that we are not able to go beyond them and actually go at the right source of the joy.
You know, when you said about Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, I was reminded of my school teacher,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, one day in class he came. He was our physics teacher. So we were about to start a new lesson. So he began his lesson in a very strange manner. He said, you know, suppose I were to give you a liquid and tell it's very tasty. It's cool, very nice, very tasty. It's something you have never tasted before, but when you taste it, you'll love it. What will you do? So we thought, we were wondering what is this connection to physics and what chapter is next. So we just, all of us answered that, sir, we will all drink it. He says, okay. Now what if I tell you that all what I said is true, but it is poison? He said, no sir, we won't drink it. The answer was unanimous. None of us said we would drink it. But he says, but don't worry, wait. You know that poison, though it is poison, no, it won't kill you now. I said, what is this poison then? It will just kill you after 3 days. So, still we don't want to drink it, sir. He says, what is the guarantee, you know? What is the guarantee that life will be, you will be alive till 3 days, so you can as well drink it. No. Okay, what about, it will not kill you after 3 days. Say it will kill you after 2 months. Till then you're fine. You can drink. Still none of us wanted to drink. He increased it to 1 year. 5 years. It was only when he increased it to 100 years that one or two said that, not one or two, about 5 or 10 said that, maybe sir, maybe we'll drink. If you guarantee us that when I drink it, I will be alive for 100 years, and after 100 years only I'll die,
mm-hmm.
then fine, then I'll drink it.
Okay.
So I said, okay, fine. So, but still, you know, half of the class, we still hoped that, you know, maybe I'll live for 101 years, so I don't want to drink it.
Okay.
So now, sir took out only those guys who said that they would drink, and he said, now I'll tell you one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's one more small problem with this drink.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that once you drink it, you may feel like drinking it again. And every next time you drink it, you'll feel like drinking it again even stronger.
Okay.
And every time you drink extra, 1 year is reduced from your life.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sir, then we don't want to risk it. And slowly we realized what he was getting at. And without him even actually telling it, we suddenly realized that he was referring to things such as smoking or drugs, because that is what they do. They give you joy. You know, science can actually tell you that. That if you start smoking today, and if you start deriving joy from that, rest assured that 25 years from now or 30 years from now, you are dead. It is as good as that poison that will give you joy, that will give you everything. Only thing is, you are assured to die after 30 years. Will you take it? So I remember this example, because once you know that it is definitely going to kill you, why would you want to go into that? Though it may be giving pleasure.
I think that's the surprising thing, you know. You have these messages on those products now. It actually says that this is injurious to health.
Mm.
You know, when you buy a medicine, and I remember, you know, a person whom I knew, you know, he bought a medicine for his child.
Mm.
And among the many cautions which was written there, one said that it is found cancerous in rodents.
Oh, carcinogenic, okay. For the, okay, rats. Huh?
Yeah, it's carcinogenic in rodents. And so he ran to his doctor and he said, sir, it says carcinogenic in rodents. Can I give it to my kid?
Okay.
That's how particular we are when it comes to medicines and, you know, things like that. We don't give something which is expired.
Hmm.
We don't use. But here on the product, it says it's injurious to health. It can kill you. And, you know, it decreases your response time. It decreases your attention and all that. But still, people go for it.
And in fact, you know, that is the physiology and psychology of addiction. Addiction is so powerful that the companies that actually manufacture all these addictive substances, they don't care if the government tells that you have to put graphic images and write that it's more injurious. They don't care, because they know that once you are addicted, you just can't get out, because addiction is so powerful. You just seem so helpless and caught. There are so many cases of people saying that, you know, I would love to give this up, but, you know, I just can't.
Or somebody like Mark Twain who said, you know, it's so easy to give up smoking. I've given it up 1,000 times. Literally, I think that's what happens, you know, when you're addicted. You can give it up so many times because it keeps coming back again and again. And I think that's also one of the reasons why addiction is is considered bad. Because when you look at Swami's message, Swami says, don't waste food, don't waste money, don't waste energy.
Mm.
And these are things which actually, I mean, addiction is something which leads you to do all this. Don't waste food, don't waste money, don't waste energy.
Definitely don't waste, it wastes your time, it wastes your energy, it wastes money, food. How do you think? No, maybe food doesn't work here. Addiction.
Yeah, I mean, don't waste food. When you say don't waste food, Swami says, I'm reminded of, you know, one of our lecturers. He was once telling us in class that one day when he was a student, he thought himself, which one of Swami's messages can he take up and practice?
Okay.
So he said, any one. Swami says, any one you practice. So he was wondering which one is the easiest to practice. Okay, so in his mind he thought that don't waste food seems to be a practically easy thing to follow.
Definitely.
Because, you know,
I mean, if I'm given a choice also, I think I'll choose that.
Yeah,
don't waste food.
Right.
I love food, so why will I waste it?
So he said, okay, don't waste food, so I will never waste food in the hostel. So he did it very diligently and he felt very happy about it, that yeah, something at least I'm, you know, following. Then in the next discourse which Swami delivered, Swami said, I say don't waste food. What is food? Swami said. You know, you have one organ which is the mouth. Do you think whatever goes through only that organ is food? Anything which goes into your body is food. Which means what you see is food, what you hear is food, what you feel is food. Any input which comes from the world outside goes into you is food. So you should make sure you don't waste it.
And that is why Swami always says that see no evil, see what is good.
Right.
Hear no evil, hear what is good. Do no evil, do what is good.
Because all that is also food.
Wow. You give a rhyming ring to the whole thing now.
Okay. So I think that, I mean, if you see it in that context, you know, as I said, you know, it reduces your attention, some of these intoxicants. And it actually, when you talk of getting something from the society, Swami talks of gratitude. These are all things which actually change your character so much. Addictions, because that becomes a priority, most importantly. When we see some of these people who get into addictions, that becomes a priority. They forget their family, they forget their duties to their family and the society. I think that is why, that's one of the evils of addictions, right?
And Swami, you know, used to say that in the beginning, man drinks wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then wine drinks man. You know, I feel that is a beautiful statement which summarizes the difference between a pleasure and an addiction. Maybe when man drinks wine, it's pleasure. But when wine drinks man, it's definitely an addiction. I think, Prem, we'll continue along this addiction and different things that Swami has said about it. After a short break, we'll return back because there are tons to discuss. So, dear listeners, please don't go away. He has a small, gentle break.
Yes, after we will play for you a song, a Telugu song which Swami had written, which we used to sing so many times, in which, you know, Swami says how we get attached to things like this. Then Swami talks about cinemas, Swami talks about how attractions in the outside world make you get addicted to them. So at the other end of the song, we were going to continue our discussion on habits and addictions.
Shiva 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 Yana Radha Shiva Chintalella Bapu Koni Mana Radha Chintalella Bapu Koni Mana Radha Shiva Meti Jagamanta Tirigevu Chintamani Chanta Chigulevi Avani Sukham Gula Kanna Devini Avani Sukham Gula Kanna Devini Sabali gini gile gadi mele Shiva 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 yana rada Shiva chintanella bapu koni mana rada Shiva chintanella bapu koni mana rada Chodhu bokka uri bari sudhu lanna Miru siddha madure kadu chada koda Mudu mudu ganu kai mutha taru chepinapu Mudu mudu ganu kai mutha taru chepinapu Mochi kaga yundare uche bugara Shiva 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 yana rada Shiva chintanella bapu koni mana rada Chintanella bapu koni mana rada Pani maru, pini maru, palu maru, chani chani
దైవ సన్నిధి నిలు పరక్షణమైన దైవ సన్నిధి నిలు పర కరుణారా కడు కన్నవా ఓ కరుణారా కడు కన్నవా శివ 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 శివయన రాధా చింతనెల బాపు కొని మన రాధా నీ చింతనెల బాపు కొని మన రాధా
Supreme, I think the most important aspect, not most important aspect, one important point here is to know how to differentiate between an addiction and a non-addiction. I feel for this, we can take reference to what Paramahamsa Yogananda, you know, he has said in that autobiography of a yogi, I remember reading that. He says that when he felt that he was addicted to tea and coffee, these are another among the many addictions that people get into. So he said that when he found out that he felt that he was addicted to tea and coffee, he just decided to stop drinking tea and coffee from that moment on for the next 1 year.
Okay.
And that's it, he did it. He did it for 1 year, and he said that more than for proving to anybody else, he wanted to prove it to himself that he is not addicted to tea or coffee. I feel that's an amazing thing. If at all we have doubts, if we feel that, you know, I'm not addicted to this, I'm not addicted to Facebook, I'm not addicted to online gaming, I'm not addicted to any of this, it's just that I'm doing it because it's there, if it's not there, I'm fine. Can I simply cut off from it for the next, forget 1 year, at least for a month, at least for 2 months, maybe 2 months or at least a month? If I'm not able to cut off from that, I feel it is definitely an addiction. It needs to be dealt with because I am not in control of it and it is in control of me. So the best way to define an addiction would be something controls me and I don't control it, then it's an addiction.
I think, that's one of the easiest ways, I feel, you know. Because if you see, I mean, there is something, a differentiation between routine and habit. I think a lot of people have a routine. Like, you know, they wake up in the morning, they have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, you brush your teeth.
Yeah. So it is important to see a difference between routine and habit. And this is how it is. Something which you do consciously, knowing that it is good for you. And when for some reason it is not done, I mean, it doesn't change your you know, nature and change the way you are at peace with yourself. You know, something which makes you restless and something which says you, tells you that you cannot be without that. And I think that is dangerous.
Right? Correct.
And talking of addictions, the most common addictions, and, you know, where there is no ambiguity about accepting them as evil addictions, I think you would agree that it's smoking, drinking and doing drugs, right?
Correct.
And, you know, it's interesting that Swami had come in a time when these were all actually on the rise in the early 60s, 70s, you know, that was the time when people were literally discovering more and more of these intoxicants.
Okay.
Right? Because, I mean, if you talk of liquor, if you talk of alcohol, there is mention of it even in the ancient scriptures. There's something called somapanam and all that is there. But I think the 20th century and 21st century started seeing more such intoxicants. You know, so many varieties of smokings and cigarettes and cigars and all that. And during that time, the impact which Swami made in the life of so many people is truly remarkable. The way Swami helped so many people kick habits. Because, you know, Swami by himself stood as an attraction. And he made it very clear that now if you want to come near me, if you want to please me, I want you to give up all these things.
Wow. That's an interesting way people can give up these kind of habits if they are into. That is, find something that's more attractive than the habit itself.
Right. And Swami would do this not only by that. You know, Swami would definitely, through the devotion which people had for him, would, you know, try to let them drop these things, but also at the same time counseling them about the evil of these habits. Like how you said, you know, thoughts leading to characters, or habit actually makes a character. Swami did not have told this, honestly. But Swami also gave us the reason. Swami also gave us the reason. I think one reason for him to give us the detail about it was maybe so that we can actually share it with others.
Correct.
You know, not everybody can actually relate to the love which a devotee has with Swami and keep that as a basis for transformation.
Before we proceed ahead in this discussion, Prem, I think just to get a feel for how strongly Swami was opposed to these addictions, we should play that small audio clip.
Right, I know this was during, I think, Swami's 69th birthday.
Okay.
Where Swami very, very emphatically said that if you want to give me anything, I want these three things from you.
Okay, what are those three things?
Yeah, let's listen to it from Swami's own voice.
Embodiments of love. You view this day as the 69th birthday of Bhagavan. Swami has no...
happy birthday.
Many say happy birthday. Bhagavan is always happy. Then why should you say happy
birthday?
You be happy. Your happiness is Bhagavan's happiness. This is the main thing.
Swami ki... ఒక విధమైనటువంటి కానుకగా మీరు భావించి ఈ మాంస భక్షణ, మద్యపానము, ఈ స్మోకింగ్ మూడు కూడా స్వామికి అర్పితం చేయండి.
దేర్ఫోర్ యు షుడ్ సాక్రిఫైస్ నాన్ వెజిటేరియనిజం, డ్రింకింగ్ అండ్ స్మోకింగ్ టుడే.
మూడింటిని మీరు అర్పితం చేయటం వల్ల మీరు బాగుపడతారు, సమాజం బాగుపడుతుంది, దేశం కూడా బాగుపడుతుంది.
వెన్ వన్స్ యు సాక్రిఫైస్ ద సొసైటీ విల్ ప్రోగ్రెస్, యు విల్ బి బెటర్.
కుటుంబము, సమాజము, దేశము బాగుపడటమే స్వామి యొక్క లక్ష్యం.
The main aim of Bhagavan is the prosperity.
Swami is answering to that thing.
If you have full faith in Bhagavan's teachings, follow these three.
Yedo repu 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 nenu kovukuntu.
Don't postpone saying tomorrow.
Endukanaga?
Why?
Idi next anukuntunte adi poorthi next ga maaripothundi.
If you go on saying next, it becomes a test.
Next ga maaripothundi.
Then it becomes taste.
వద్దు.
నౌ
ఇప్పుడే ఈ నిమిషంలోనే కూడాను ఆ సంకల్పాన్ని మీరు దృఢం చేసుకోవాలి.
రైట్ నౌ ఇట్సెల్ఫ్ డిటర్మిన్.
ఇది ఈనాడు మీ నుంచి నేను ఆశించేటువంటి యొక్క ఆశ.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ఎక్స్పెక్టెడ్ బై భగవాన్ టుడే ఫ్రమ్ అస్.
కనుక ప్రేమస్వరూపులైనటువంటి వారు మీరు తప్పగా దీనిని ఆచరించి స్వామికి ఆనందాన్ని అందించి దేశానికి, కుటుంబానికి కూడాను సరైన ఆదర్శప్రాయులు అవుతారని నేను ఆశిస్తూ ఆశీర్వదిస్తూ నా ప్రసంగాన్ని విరమిస్తున్నాను.
Bhagavan expects that you would follow these three things. Make yourself happy, your family and the country, by and large, and brings his discourse to a close.
Wow. I don't think that any doubt will be left in anybody's mind as to what Swami feels when it comes to drinking, smoking and non-vegetarianism. Swami was vehement. And that is what he has been doing since his childhood too, as we have been discussing in our Satyam Shyam Sundaram Satsang. Though he was born into a family that had a history of eating meat, he changed all that. Completely gave up and he has not touched meat in his life. So, Swami is so strong about these, and you know, one more thing is we heard Swami emphasizing, saying, don't say I will start from tomorrow, from day after, the next year. Right away start giving up. I remember in one more discourse, you know, Bhagwan had said, he said, this habit is so strong that you have to completely give it up. Completely give it up. Unless it's completely given up, it will leave its traces that will again grow, you know, like weeds, like parasites. Yeah, like right. Parasites and weeds, they'll grow and become so big again. So he said, for example, if you decide that, you know, I will give up my habit little by little. Little only I'll give up. Say, so you give up H, he says. From habit, he says, a bit is left.
Okay.
Then you give up A. bit is still left. Then Swami says, you give up the bee, it is still left. And then Swami would say, you give up the eye, tea is still left. You know that bad habit of tea. So Swami would say that if you want to give up a habit, you have to give it up completely. Completely you have to give it up.
Beautifully Swami says that, you know, if you say, let us put it to later, it becomes a taste, Swami says. You know, and it becomes even more difficult.
First it starts as a test. You just want to test it out. After that it becomes your taste and you just do not want to give it up.
Really. And Arvind, even as you say, but when Swami says you have to give it up now, you know, there are some addictions which cannot be given up like that. There are some addictions which, if given up drastically and suddenly, will actually affect the body so badly.
Correct. And that is why they have these de-addiction schedules.
Right. And you have this Alcoholics Anonymous where you know, you are given other substitutes.
And slowly weaned
out.
Because, because if you are withdrawn suddenly, okay, see, that is why Swami says you have to give it up completely. And you have to start immediately. He doesn't say that today you give it up and that's all, stop it. Okay, you are supposed to wean away. I am in fact reminded of a Chinnakatha, a beautiful Chinnakatha, which Swami narrates on how one gives up an addiction.
Okay.
Swami tells the story of an opium addict who just depended completely on opium for his day-to-day existence. He knew it was bad, he wanted to give it up, but he was just helpless in the face of the powerful habit. And one day, a holy man walks into the village, and this addict, opium addict, meets the holy man and tells him, respected sire, I want to give up this habit, but I am just unable to give it up. Because I can't spend even a single day without opium. So can you give me a way in which I can kick this habit without having to give up eating opium?
Okay.
You know, anybody is told this way, the first thing will be, you must be crazy. If you want to give it up, you have to give it up. If you want to eat it, you have to remain an addict. You don't want to be an addict, but you don't want to give it up. But the holy man was also a wise man, and he gave a very interesting solution. He told him that, listen, there is a way you can do this. How much of opium do you think you need per day? So this man brought out a pouch of opium, and he said that this much is the amount. Okay, now what you do, the wise man, the sage, the hermit, took a few chalk pieces, equivalent in weight to the amount of opium that this addict had kept aside. Once on the weighing scale they balanced, he said, okay, from today onwards, every day you can have that much opium which is equal to the weight of these chalks. Is it fine with you? The addict was thrilled. He said, wow, I'm getting to eat drugs to kick my addiction. Why not? It's fantastic. Are you sure it'll work? And then the hermit says, it'll surely work if and only if you write the word Om 9 times every day with this chalk. And you know, well, we know what happens. You know, you write with the chalk reduces in size. So every day the amount of opium that this addict took reduced, till one day the chalks disappeared and so did his habit. Now in this Chinnakatha there are three things, Prem, that I felt are very, very beautiful and significant. The first thing is, you know, the first thing that the hermit did was to ensure that this habit does not grow any further. The first step in kicking away an addiction is to ensure, forget killing it, is to ensure that it does not grow. And how did the hermit do it? By limiting it to the weight of the chalks. Now you are assured that that addict will not eat more than that. So that is the first step. The second step is, after limiting it, ensuring it does not increase, gradually reduce it day by day. So therefore, that is what the hermit did by telling him to write Om 9 times every day. It reduces the size of chalk. You know, at this juncture, there's another very beautiful point. See, he could have written his own name. He could have written tree, he could have written pond, he could have written frog. Why Om? This was what I was thinking, you know. Why did Swami make a story in which the hermit advises him to write Om? This means that if you want to kick up an addiction, you definitely need God's help. Because scientifically and theoretically, it does not matter what you write with the chalk. You could have written, as I said, a tree or a frog.
Right.
But he was told to write Om because Swamis, you know, that is the way. Swamis, every word has so much significance. Every story is having so many facets to it. And I felt that the meaning from this was, if you want to kick an addiction, you definitely need God's help there. Without God's help, it becomes difficult. And that's why Om and not tree or frog.
Beautiful. And in fact, you know, talking of God's grace to kick an addiction and putting in place what Swami said, drop it now.
Mm.
And as I said, there are some addictions which cannot be dropped like that. And you know, there's one very, very powerful incident of one of Swami's own classmates.
Classmates? Right? Oh, okay.
We are yet to come to that phase of Swami's life in our Satyam Shrim Sundaram afternoon satsangs, where Swami studied in Uruvakonda. Okay, there was one classmate of Swami who happened to be a Muslim boy who went on to become a doctor, you know, in the early 1960s, you can imagine. He must have been a man of good respect in the society for having become a medical practitioner. But you know, he lost his wife. He had 10 children, about 6 girls and 4 boys.
Okay.
And lost his wife, and I think that led to some other events, and he eventually became depressed. And he got into this habit of taking morphine injections.
Hmm.
Okay, and that is supposed to be one of the worst addictions to come out of. It's very, very difficult because it really modifies your, you know,
constitution
yes. in the body.
The blood is changed,
right?
And the chemicals in the body, there's an imbalance created,
exactly,
such that you cannot stay without morphine.
Yeah. So he says, you know, he says how he goes into that habit.
Okay.
I mean, it's so really scary, and it really makes me wonder how people deal with it when they get into this, because you know, he says he starts with 2 injections per day. That's how he started taking morphine injections. I think most of these people have some kind of mental depression, and just to make them forget about that pain which they're undergoing in life, they take it. And he says from two a day, within the next week or 8 days, he's taking 4 a day. Okay, just doubles.
Doubled.
Okay.
Wow.
And then in the next 4-5 days, it becomes 8 a day.
Oh my God.
He needs to take 8 injections a day. And then within a month, it is 16 injections a day.
Oh God.
Okay, and slowly, even as these things are happening, his medical practice is falling. Because, you know, you're not in your best of senses when you're under the influence of drugs like this. So the medical practice is falling. He's not able to take care of his family. And imagine, he's taking 16 a day. And he says, in the next month, it has come to 20 a day.
20 injections a day?
Right. And in the span of 3 months since
he's... You know, 20 injections a day is more than 1 per hour.
1 per hour. You know, you're awake.
Waking hours, yeah.
Waking hours are much lesser than 20 hours, and you're taking 20 injections a day. And he says within 3 months since he started this habit, he's taking 30 injections a day.
Oh my God.
Okay, and he says that 30 injections a day, his practice is not enough to fund that kind of an expensive habit. He says that he slowly starts selling all the land and the houses that he has earned all these years, and what all his family has passed on to him. He says he's selling all that just to make sure that he's able to buy 30 injections per day. Okay, and he says that, you know, it's just that only that remains in his life. Eventually he even stops his practice. And he says there's no food at home. He's not feeding his children. Because every money, every bit of fees which comes to him goes into buying morphine injections. And he says few people who knew him would, instead of giving the fees to him, would give it to the children. Or buy some food and give it to the children. And that's how the children were, you know, living. And imagine, it's gone for 3 or 4 months.
Oh my God.
And every time a patient comes, the children will go and beg him, please don't give the money to our father, please give it to us. And you know, this is how he's going. And one side he knew what he was doing, how wrong it was. And as I said, he couldn't quit the habit. Because every time he even reduced, instead of 30, even if he took 26, 27, his body would react very adversely. And you know, when he was going through this, he says that the people in his town, Uruvakonda, he was living in Uruvakonda, and he sees that a bhajan mandali has started.
Okay.
Okay, and he realizes that this was the boy who studied with him. The Swami, who actually was a little Satyam, who studied with him, has come to become Sai Baba, and he's being worshipped in his very town. A bhajan mandali started, and they're all doing bhajans. So he says one day he goes to this place. And he says, you know, what all efforts he has put in trying to quit this habit. He says that there is a person, one of his friends, who goes and gets a brain surgery done to stop this habit of taking morphine.
or to try to alter your brain so you're no longer
dependent.
That's
exactly, that's how difficult it is. A cranial surgery is done so that you can quit the habit. But he says that, you know, it could require 3,000 rupees in those days, and it was something which he couldn't afford.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he goes through all this, and finally he goes to the bhajan session one day, and he says that I stand in front of Swami's picture and I say, Baba, once you studied with me, you were a friend of mine. I don't know if you still remember me, but you know, I'm so lost here. My family is deteriorating. My children are suffering. I want to kick this habit. You know, do something, help me. So then for some reason he makes a resolve. He says, I will give up taking these injections for 3 days.
Okay.
And even as he is making the resolve, he knows how difficult it is.
That means he has to restrain himself from 90 injections.
Right. And he knows how impossible it is. But he says, for 3 days, I will not touch these injections. But at the end of it, you should remove this addiction completely from me. He says, I'll give you a word. I'll stick to it. Whatever happens, for 3 days, I will not take an injection. But at the end of it, you should help me kick this habit. And
those 3 days might have been help for him, right?
Oh my God, you cannot believe. You know, he goes back home and he tells his children that this is what he's going to do. And he says, I'm going to lock myself in the room. How much ever I bang the door, don't open the door and let me outside. Okay, because he knows that once that adverse reaction starts, he's not himself. He might not even know that he's taken a resolve like this. So, you know, he says, he goes inside, locks himself up. In the first day, he starts getting muscle cramps. You know, cramps in his stomach. There's a bit of pain. But he says, no, I will not take. And the second day, he says he starts bleeding in his feces and urine.
Oh my God.
You know, the body is just not accepting it. And he's yelling at the top of his voice. He doesn't know what to do. He's crying. For hours together, he's crying. And the children don't know what to do. They're like saying, it came to a state where they wanted to give him that morphine injection and relieve him of that pain. But he said, no, I've given word to my Swami. I want to hold on to it. And the third day, it seems he's banging his head on the wall. And they were scared that he's going to kill himself because that's how bad it was. And the children run and call one of his colleagues, who's also a doctor, who comes with a morphine injection. And that friend of his begs him. He said, permit me to give this morphine injection to you, otherwise you will die. The reaction is too much for you to handle. Permit me to give this morphine injection. So you know what he tells? He says, see, I've given a word 3 days. So he says, you come tomorrow morning. By then the word I've given to Swami is, you know, completed. You bring these injections tomorrow, I will take it tomorrow. Okay. But for 3 days I will not take. Okay, so his friend goes away. And around 4 in the morning, at the end of the third day, somehow he goes to sleep. And he dreams that he goes to a pilgrimage, interestingly. And you know, and that day, after so many months, after so many weeks, he actually sleeps. And he wakes up at 11 in the morning.
Okay,
and 11 he wakes up, he comes out, and his friend is waiting with a morphine injection. And he smiles to his friend and says, I don't need morphine anymore.
And in 3 days he's done.
In 3 days he's quit that habit.
Wow.
I mean, what more can you say of this? You know, you told of that Chinnakatha. Really, this is God's grace plus that effort. And it is quite, you know, disproportional. It's not like the effort actually led to him leaving that habit. Because in any other case, he would have killed himself. But how that God's grace, that he had given a word, he had taken one step towards Swami, and how Swami made sure that he would fulfill his part of the promise.
It is almost, though you say it is not proportional, but it is multiplied a million times, but definitely there is a relay correlation between
effort
put towards God and the grace that comes from God.
Right.
It is so magnificent, Prem, and that example I think should stand us in good stead for so many of our addictions. You know, even as you were narrating, I had read this incident a long time ago and I had forgotten the details. But as you were narrating the story, I just felt that apart from these deadly world-proclaimed, world-accepted addictions like smoking, drinking and all this, even our day-to-day lives themselves are addictions to the wrong things. You know, when we get attached to materialistic things, when we get attached to careers, to fame, to name, to money, people ask what's wrong in that. There's nothing wrong in it. Just like there's nothing wrong as long as you're enjoying once or twice. But when it becomes an addiction, it starts controlling you. And in life, all of us are addicted that way because our work controls us, our careers controls us, the money controls us. I mean, we are not in control of any of these. And at a psychological level or at a different mental level, we go through those same kind of withdrawal pains. And we call out, you know, we call out and tell, Lord, don't you have compassion? Why are you not responding? Okay. Because if you don't respond, I'll go back to money. It is, just substitute the drugs with money, or substitute the drugs with career, or with power, or influence, whatever we crave for. We almost do that to God. We say, God, I'll try to give it up for some time. And then, you must make me fine. After some time, we are unable to bear without it. It's a great thing what Mohinuddin did, what Mr. Mohinuddin did. But we are not able to do that. We say, God, will you not come and save me? Will you not come and save me from this habit? Because if you don't come now, I will go back to chasing it. And we give up. We give up so many times. This example inspires us to hold on and fight on, knowing that the pain that is coming now is far less compared to the pain that will come if we go along the way we are going.
And in fact, you know, that is one of the things which Swami tells about habit.
Mm.
He says when you quit a habit, the self-confidence that comes out of that, you know, that willpower which will come out of quitting a habit is actually so great, and it will actually help you in your life itself.
Mm.
And I think it's a very practical thing. If there is anything which we feel that we are addicted to, if we can get ourselves to quit it, and you know, it gives you a new kind of energy. Yeah, I mean, I can do it. And it gives you the idea that I can do this with other things too.
Correct.
You know, whether you do it or not, that kind of confidence which comes, and that kind of empowerment which comes, the feeling of empowerment, I think that's very, very special.
Absolutely, and as we spoke about earlier, that's what even Paramahamsa Yogananda did. You know, he just wanted to ascertain for himself that it is me drinking tea and coffee and not tea and coffee drinking me. And so for 1 year, he just gave it up. It gave him back, I mean, gave him that tremendous sense of confidence and knowing that I am not addicted. That gives so much of power.
Right. And you know, talking of grace and the role, how people have given up addictions with Swami's grace. You know, one of my seniors, he narrated how his father quit smoking. You know, when he joined as a student, his father was an addict to smoking. So he would often tell Swami, that Swami, please help my father quit smoking. He smokes a lot. He's a chain smoker. So Swami would say, yeah, yeah, I will tell him and all that. And almost every interview with Swami would give that family, Swami would tell his father, no, you quit smoking. It's not good for your health. It's not good for the health of people in the family. So he also would tell, yes, Swami, I'll try. And it came to a point, one interview, Swami said, now this is it. I want you to quit. There is no more space for you. You have to quit now. Okay, and he said, Swami, it's very difficult for me because I smoke so often, and if your grace is there, I'll quit, he said. You know, that's what his father told Swami. He said, Swami, if your grace is there, Swami said, my grace is there. Dandaga undi, Swami says, you know. Enough is there. Don't worry. Okay. But you try to quit. So, and he, you know, with great difficulty, he quit smoking. He told himself that I'm not going to smoke anymore because, and actually, yeah, the most important thing was the way Swami put it to him.
Okay.
Swami said, I want you to quit smoking now. Okay. And Swami said, if you don't quit smoking, I will ensure three things.
Okay.
And Swami said, I will not talk to you. Okay. I will not give you an opportunity to talk to me. Okay. Because you can talk to Swami and Swami does not talk. If Swami said, even that will not be there. I will not even give you an opportunity to talk to me. And the worst thing is, Swami said, I will make sure that you don't even think of me.
Oh my God. For those of us who have got addicted to Swami, if I can say so, I think that is the only addiction that is worthwhile.
Yeah, you know, when Swami is upset with you, you always have that feeling that, you know, through my sadhana, through my prayer, I can please him. But here Swami is telling, I'll make sure that you don't even think of me, because that, you know, he closes that door completely. You can't even pray to him then.
And as I was saying, I think this is one addiction that we are allowed to have, addiction to God.
Absolutely.
Correct. And so since it's a, in fact, it's not a problem to have it, I feel it's a must have for all.
Right.
If everybody has addiction to God, the world will be a brighter place to live in.
And I think, I'm telling you, this is exactly what happened to this person.
Okay.
Because his addiction to Swami was so much that the idea of losing this out made him quit smoking. Because when Swami said, if you don't quit, I'm going to make sure that you have nothing of me. And he said, the situation's got really gone out of my hand. I have to quit smoking. And that's how he quit smoking. And as I said, he said, Swami, I want your grace. And Swami said, definitely it is there.
Mm.
So he said that after he quit smoking, one day after darshan, he goes out of the ashram. And he says, I told Swami that I will not smoke a cigarette.
Mm.
But I can smell that smoke when someone else is smoking.
Secondhand smoke.
Okay, passive smoking.
Oh my God.
Okay, so he says that he goes out to a shop where people are standing and smoking. And he just stands beside them, feeling that I'll at least get that smell.
Mm.
You know, so that craving will be somewhat satisfied. And the moment he, you know, inhales that smoke, he starts choking. He's not able to breathe. He starts wheezing. He catches his neck and, you know, he's very, very uncomfortable. He has to run out of that place. And that is when he realizes that he has not only quit smoking. When Swami said, my grace is there, it'll help you quit. Swami has literally made him allergic to that smell.
Oh, allergic to that smoke. Okay.
To that smell of that smoke. He's not able to even passively smoke.
That is what grace of God
can do. That is what grace can do.
Instead of a thing that gives you joy, it starts giving you pain. Automatically you give it up. Wow. One more significant thing I noted when you were narrating this episode was that, you know, when Swami told him that if you don't give up, you will lose me, I feel that is one strong motivator that we can all use to give up something that we don't like, you know. Do it for the love of God. Do it for the love of Swami. It becomes so much more pleasant and nice.
That's true. You know, but I'm sorry, Arvind, to break you off. You know, when you say love of God, I think we all are fortunate to have a God whom we can fall in love with. And we have all fallen in love with. And, you know, that can give us so much strength. But, you know, there will be people who do not have this advantage of having God in their life. And talking of a situation like that, I'm reminded of one of our former students who went out to Australia, and, you know, just by virtue of being a Swami student, he became a counselor. It's not that he was trained to be one. It's just that people felt that, you know, somebody who had a child who was addicted to smoking or who was into some kind of bad habit, they felt that they can take this boy or girl to him and have a session with him. He will just talk to him and that will help. So this is a reputation which he built without his, you know, knowing.
Okay.
It just happened and he became a counselor. So he said that he would get calls all through the week. People would say that my son is drunk and he's fallen here. Please go and help him. And he and his wife would go and help. You know, this was a seva which Swami had, without his knowledge, put him into.
Wow.
Okay, and this one particular incident which happened, I just want to narrate that. He says that he went and picked up one youth like that, who was fallen behind some bush. He had drunk the whole weekend and he was there. His mother called him up in the middle of the night saying that my son has not come back home for 4 days. So they take a car and just drive down that whole area where he usually goes with his friends, finds this guy behind a bush, picks him up, takes him home. And he says, you can live in my home as long as you want, but, you know, just make your health better and then you can go back home. And just gives him love, nothing else. Just gives him so much of brotherly love. And one day the boy wakes up and he says, I want to smoke. Okay, and this student of ours, he says that, yeah, you can smoke. I'm nobody to tell you not to smoke, but no smoking in my house. He says, because this is not my house, this is Swami's house. And there can be no smoking and drinking in Swami's house. So he gives him an option. He says, I'll take you on a drive. I will drop you at the store which is about 1 mile away from my house. Okay, I'll drop you there and I'll come back. You can pick up your smoke, finish smoking and then come back home. Okay, no smoking in my house. So, picks up this guy, drops him at the store and comes back. And then he finishes some other errands. And when he's coming back, this boy is walking and coming. And he's not smoking. So he stops the car and calls the boy and he says, why aren't you smoking? I told you can smoke outside. And then the boy says, I don't know, I didn't feel like smoking. This boy is surprised. Why is it that you don't feel like smoking? He said, because I felt that you don't like it.
Oh.
And he said, what does it matter to you? He said, I don't know. I didn't feel like displeasing you. You know, we are talking of having somebody like Swami and the fear of displeasing him waning us away from bad habits. But it need not be necessarily a love which is as pure as that. Even a love which is inspired by that love actually has power as strong as this.
When you say that, Prem, I'm reminded of one more incident, you know, a very close person, a very close friend, he was into this habit of smoking and it was quite bad. Let me say he would smoke something like 20 to 25 cigarettes a day. So it was quite bad and chain smoking, and That was when, you know, he fell in love with a girl, and this girl happens to, you know, have all these ideals ingrained in her. And she told him that she did not like, she expressed it, that she did not like the fact that he smokes. Otherwise, in an otherwise perfect person. And his love for her was such that he decided to give it up. But you know, he tried for 2-3 years, he just could not give it up. He just could not give it up. And that was when, on his job, he was actually transferred to a place very close to Puttaparthi.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, later on he got even transferred to Puttaparthi.
Okay.
So he was working out from Puttaparthi, so it became a good thing. And that was when, you know, he actually even confided that he intends to give it up. And some of us, we spoke to him and we said, we will support you in whatever way. It's a great decision that you have taken. You know, we supported him and he decided to give it up. And within a matter of 6 months, he gave it up. He gave it up, and later on, he told us that, you know, all the while, he said, there is no difference in the will that I had to give it up. I was as determined as ever to give it up, but I just could not give it up before because of the company that I kept. He said that, you know, the friend circle with whom I went, the situation that arose there, they kept kindling back that addiction. So I just found it so tough to give it up. He said, in the company of you guys, it became so easy, and now I'm nicotine free, I'm smoking free. You know, he married his sweetheart of 7 years, and it's wonderful. And she's also amazed as to how he has completely given it up. But this highlighted an important factor, which is, once you're on the path to give it up, you have to give up everything else associated with that also. All the situations that made you go into that. All the kinds of people that made you. That's why Swami says, run away from bad company. And bad company is any of the company that pulled you into that. And that was the same thing that happened even in the case of that student whom you said, whose father was smoking.
Right.
He tried to go into the company back, you know, that just seeing somebody smoke ignited in him that interest and that need to smoke again. So it is so important, while you're giving up addictions, to ensure that you do not get into the people, get into the situations, get into the positions which actually brought in that habit and addiction in you.
Very true. In fact, you know, this is actually another problem. You know, one thing is habits. You know, you get fascinated about something and get into it. The other thing is peer pressure. You know, there's a concept of social drinking now, because people get into that kind of circle where you're forced to get into such habits, and it just changes your nature in the end.
So what do you do at such times, if social drinking?
Well, there's one incident I'd like to narrate here, where, you know, getting into such habits because of peer pressure also is a sign of weakness.
Okay.
And when you actually come out strong and say that, no, this is not what I do, and that will actually benefit you in so many ways.
It could even act as a reverse peer pressure.
Right. That can inspire somebody else and can give you respect in that peer. Because everybody else there is actually caught up in that same problem. They are not able to come out of it. And they see somebody who is above that, you will automatically win the respect. You know, that's exactly happened with one of our old students, you know. After he finished his studies here, he was about to go to Germany on some particular deputation. He was working for a firm in India, and there was an important project for which he had to go and earn that project for his company. So that was the situation he was in, and surprisingly he was chosen in spite of being such a junior. So his boss had chosen him, and boss told him that, you know, it's a very prestigious deal and there are 200 other companies vying for it, and I'm really pinning my hopes on you that you will get it for us. So this boy came to Swami and he wanted to take Swami's blessing before going. And he had the opportunity to even tell Swami that he's going to Germany. And Swami asked a thing which is very weird, you know, something which he didn't expect. Swami said, what will you get for me from Germany?
Oh, so sweet.
You're going to Germany, what will you get for me? And this boy was thrilled and also surprised. He said, Swami, anything, Swami, what do you want? I'll get anything for you. And then Swami said, I want only one gift. Just come back the same way you're going. Okay, and he was surprised. He said, what does that mean? Come back the way you're going. And he felt that Swami is telling that I have made you what you are, you know, with whatever good habits and good nature. Come back the same way.
don't get them damaged.
Okay, so he goes to Germany and needless to say, he makes an impressive presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So that evening, after all the presentations are over, during dinner, all these people, all these companies which are trying for that contract, and the main boss who is actually awarding the contract, everybody, he invites them for a grand dinner, and they're all there. And everybody's drinking, as I said, you know, social drinking, that circle, everybody drinks. So this boss, who's actually the main guy, who can hand over the contract, he is talking with this student of ours, and he offers him a drink.
Hmm.
Okay, the boy very politely refuses. He says, "No, sir, I don't drink."
Okay.
So that man said, "I'm offering you a drink. Are you refusing me?"
Hmm.
So he said, "I'm really sorry to do that, sir, but I don't drink."
Hmm.
I don't drink. And, you know, in circles such as this, when you say, "I don't do this," people get offended because it's like telling that you're doing a mistake. I don't want to do that.
Correct.
So he,
in fact, I feel that is one of the reasons why peer pressure also comes. Because they feel that if we make everybody indulge in this, then we need not feel guilty that we are the only people
like
doing
junk. Bringing the bar down in a hurdle race. You don't have to jump so high. So, you know, he got offended. He said, "You know, how can you refuse? I'm giving you a drink." He said, "Sorry, sir, I don't drink." And then that man went on to say, "Young man, do you realize that I'm the one who's going to be giving the contract?"
Correct.
"And you are refusing me something?"
Hmm.
So he says, "Yes, sir, I'm completely aware of that, but I don't drink." And he said, the boy said, all the while, the one statement which was running in his head is Swami saying, "Come back the way you went. Come back the way you went."
Hmm.
So he said, "Sorry, sir, I don't drink." And this man said, and he got very, very upset. He said, "I'm giving you something and you're refusing," and he walked away. And all surprises, the next day, the contract is given to his company.
In spite of him,
in spite of
picking
him,
off the boss.
Yeah. And then the boss calls him and he says that, you know, "I was so impressed by the way you stood by your principles. And I that was what inspired me to give you this contract."
So more than all his due diligence and hard work, this final thing was the ceiling.
So it really does matter, you know. That's why Swami says that, you know, you might think that, you know, what does one habit matter in spiritual life? Or what does one habit lead to your pursuits in life? All these things do matter because these add to your strengths as much as they can remove your strengths.
Well, dear listeners, the time in our studios is 1:58. We've just got about 2 minutes, and this was an attempt, yes, to have a satsang. And as Prem indicated, there are points where we went into different directions than what we had prepared, but that's what always happens during the satsang. It has been wonderful for us, and hope you too enjoyed this satsang as much as we enjoyed presenting it. The topic of addictions goes on, and there are so many things that Swami has said. We hope that this has been a good peep into why one must not get addicted, because spirituality always wants us to be in control rather than allowing things to control us. And then how addictions can become very problematic, because they make us waste time, effort, energy, money, everything. And these are the ones that even ruin our character. And then how they must be given up completely without a trace of it, because even a trace can reignite the same thing. And how God's grace is absolutely essential to give it up. And finally, as we discussed, that if we are keen and are ready to put in our energy and efforts, God's grace is always there. Like in the case of the smoking father, how it made him nauseated and in fact allergic to cigarette smoke. And in the case of the boy, won him a contract in spite of him offending a boss who told him to indulge in a bad habit. God's grace works in ways beyond our imagination. Let us just trust God's grace the way Moinuddin did. When he said that, "Come what may, for 3 days I will not touch morphine, even if it brings on death." That kind of faith in the Lord, if we have, His grace will definitely flow. And whatever be our major addictions or little bad habits, definitely with Swami's grace, we will be able to overcome it. With that prayer, we offer our most humble gratitude at the lotus feet of our dear Lord. And we hope to see you and catch up with you again the next week at the same time for another segment of Afternoon Satsang. And right now, we will conclude with a song, the other side of which you will be met by Chandu Vijay, Brother Chandu Vijay, with Love to Love.
तुम बिन मोरी कौन खबर ले, तुम बिन मोरी कौन खबर ले, गोवर्धन गिरिधारी गोवर्धन गिरिधारी हो, तुम बिन मोरी कौन खबर ले। मोर मुकुट श्री छत्र विराजे, कुंडल की छवि न्यारी ओ, मोर मुकुट श्री छत्र विराजे, कुंडल की छवि न्यारी हो, कुंडल की छवि न्यारी हो, तुम बिन मोरी कौन खबर ले, गोवर्धन गिरिधारी गोवर्धन गिरिधारी हो।